Hi, I'm Susie Larson. Thanks so much for listening to this podcast from Live the Promise. There are many more podcasts available up on the website at myfaithradio.com, and your support makes this possible. Thank you.
Welcome to Live the Promise. So glad you're listening today. I'm Bill Arnold in for Susie Larson, and I'm so excited to have you joining me on Live the Promise. We're here to talk about the top three traits every successful leader needs. My guest says that when these three, humility, hunger, and hustle, are in balance, your leadership will take off in huge ways. So I'm a little intimidated by all of this because I feel right now I'm a second nap away from having a perfect day, and I think I work just hard enough to make me feel like I'm succeeding. So I have a feeling my guest, Brad Lominick, is going to challenge me today, and I don't mind a good challenge. He is a hustler, and he is humility, and he's got hunger, and he does all this leadership really well. So we're going to enjoy this hour with him. Let me tell you a little bit about him. He's got some credentials, so this could take me up to the whole hour to get through. So here I go. Brad Lominick is a business entrepreneur, speaker, and he's a sought-after leadership advisor, author, and longtime president of Catalyst. For over 10 years, Brad led the Catalyst Conference and has partnered with America's most respected leaders, including John Maxwell, Jim Collins, Malcolm Gladwell, Mark Burnett, and Tony Dungy. His books include The Catalyst Leader, and the one we're discussing today, H3 Leadership, Be Humble, Stay Hungry, Always Hustle. You can find his influencer page up at myfaithradio.com. Brad, welcome to the show.
Bill, thanks for having me. And you're being kind with all of your great things you're saying about me.
Well, it's exactly how you wrote it, so I'm just reading it.
Hey, good. Yeah, well played.
Yeah, thanks. So on Live the Promise, we always love to start with discussing a passage of Scripture. I think you chose Matthew 5:16.
I did. Yes, I've always sort of been drawn to that verse and that part of the Gospel of Matthew. And sorry, by the way, for I was trying to find a place I could get away from the announcements, but yeah. If anybody who travels knows,
it's hard to get away from the announcements everywhere when you're in an airport. Yeah, but I appreciate you taking the time to talk to us.
Well, no, I just thank you.
In the old days, Brad, you could slip outside and just go outside for a while, but now you can't because you got to go through security and everything again, which you're not going to do. But we'll be good. Go ahead.
I wish they would just let me outside on the tarmac. How about that? That would be way easier.
Yeah.
I don't have that badge.
Then the authorities would come for you. Then we wouldn't have an interview at all.
They would capture me.
Yes, they would.
So Matthew 5:16, you know, let your light shine before men such a way that they'll see your good works and glorify your Father who's in heaven. And you know, I love the idea that as leaders, whatever assignment we have for this season of life, that is our light. And you know, when you look at that verse, let your light, what is a light? What is that, like an actual light? Is that a lightsaber? Is that a flashlight? Is that a, you know, it is the gospel within us. It's the fact that we follow Jesus and the Holy Spirit, the fragrance of Christ and all the things that make us who we are. But I also think there's a piece of that verse that is, you know, let your accounting, let your leadership, let your coffee making, let your business running, let your pastor leading, let your preaching, all the things we do, those are the things that give us the authority to be able to then have a bridge with people around us. And so that's always been a life verse for me, and I've tried to live it out. I don't know if I'm always great at it.
Yeah. Okay, before we get into discussing your book, H3 Leadership, I want to ask you a little bit about your own personal faith journey and how you came to Christ.
Yeah, I grew up in Oklahoma, small town outside of Tulsa, and grew up in the Church of God of Anderson, Indiana.
Okay.
Small church, was part of the, you know, Sunday school. Like, my parents both went to church there. They I don't know if they forced me, but they definitely encouraged me every Sunday to be in Sunday school. And fourth grade, you know, like, God got a hold of my heart. And actually, probably even earlier than that, but I do remember fourth grade sort of being the place where I realized what this Christian life meant. I was baptized, you know, became a follower, officially a follower of Jesus. And I've always sort of had this sense on my life, at least I feel like it, that, you know, that God has been in control and also had something significant for me. And not like meaning that was going to be something big, but just more that my life was on purpose. And so, you know, Young Life was a huge part of my story in college. And I was a leader with Young Life at the University of Oklahoma. And I think for me, that was a place where I started to really understand grace,
mm-hmm.
and what it looked like in the life of a middle schooler and high schooler. And just this idea of meeting people, meeting kids where they are, and loving them until they ask why. And just mm-hmm. this idea that, you know, God meets us in our place of sin. He doesn't wait on us to show up sinless and then say, okay, you're in.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I really feel like, Bill, that my life has been just in some ways, like, not fair, because every single sort of intersection for me, I've found people that have mentored me and shaped me and helped me along this Christian journey, you know. But it all started in the Sunday school class of Bunny Baker. And Bunny was my, you know, the third or fourth grade teacher in the Sunday school at First Church of God, Bristow, Oklahoma.
Uh-huh.
I think we had seven kids in there, and Bunny explained the gospel to us, and I said yes.
Yeah, love it. Yeah, what I'm not hearing so far is a real rebellious phase. It doesn't sound like you had one. Maybe you're not talking about it.
You know, I really didn't. I mean, I had some of those moments of rebellion, I think, in college, of, you know, sort of testing the waters of what does it look like to I would say living out the lukewarm life.
Yeah.
But, you know, I really haven't. I mean, I feel like that there was such a sense for me that God had purposed me for something. And the scriptures and the gospel and church and the Christian life was so injected into me young, I was almost scared to rebel.
Interesting.
Like I almost felt like there was a sense of, you know what, if you go through that stage, you might never come back.
Mm.
And so it wasn't a fear. It was just more of a sense of raw authority, probably more than anything else.
Yeah. That's really interesting. I know parents would love their kids to feel that way, for sure. You know,
well, and I was the son of the, and still am the son. My dad's retired now, but he was the middle school principal and a football coach.
Okay.
So when you're the middle school principal's son and the football coach's son in a small town in Oklahoma,
yeah,
you better make sure you're toeing the line. Otherwise,
yeah,
you're gonna get it at school and at home.
Yeah, so now you're in college, you're involved in Young Life, you have an appetite for evangelism, and then are you looking at all this going, there's a better way to organize this, there's a better way to show leadership? I mean, did you start getting leadership skills or desires in college? When did that take seed?
Well, that was birthed early on for me. I remember in first grade, Bill, like the first day of school, Mrs. Weaver's class, 30 kids in first grade, and by the time the day was over, I knew everybody's first and last name. By the second day, I had rearranged a few desks to try to capture some friend circles, and I was bartering deals in the cafeteria between, you know, the chocolate milkshake and the Cheetos and the peanut butter jelly sandwich. And, you know, I mean, I felt like one of my places in life was to be out in front.
Yeah,
and I didn't know what it meant at that time, and it showed up in school. It showed up all through elementary, middle school, high school, and college as well. I think the first place I really recognized it was in college, and the idea that I had three or four organizations that I was part of the leadership of and helping launch things. And I started to see that, you know, like, it's one thing to lead people in a small community in your school of 300 kids. It's another thing to go to a university campus of 25,000 and start to have some influence.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the place that I started to see it. And then, you know, post-college, it just started to show up more and more. And I started to understand what my leadership, not just my expression of leadership, but what was actually the foundation of it. What was the DNA of it? If somebody said, how do you define your leadership? What would I say? And that's where, I mean, the idea of hungry, humble hustle,
mm-hmm.
like that started to show itself in college. And I didn't have the words for it at that point, but when people would start to say, hey, Brad, like, I noticed something about you. What is it? And I would always hear myself saying something about those three pieces. And, you know, that turned really into my leadership mantra. And it's been that way for 20 years. Like, H3 was not just a book title that we came up in a marketing meeting at Thomas Nelson. I mean, this was like, for me, the essence and the foundation of my leadership DNA. And so, yeah, it really started to show itself during that place of the 4 years of college.
Mm-hmm. Brad, are leaders born or are they cultivated or a little bit of both? What's your feeling on that?
Yeah, you know, I would say both.
Mm-hmm.
There's definitely a skill set and a DNA that God wires in people that is different.
Mm-hmm.
But I also believe that leaders are truly made. Like you are made into a leader because one, as a Christian, becoming more Christ-like in essence requires you to be more of a leader.
Mm-hmm.
You know, becoming more like Jesus does say that leadership is now part of your stewardship, and not because you're in charge of something. Like that's not the definition. It's not about title security. It's not about position hierarchy. It's not about any of those things of being in charge or it is in front, but I would say it's more about your influencing people.
Mm-hmm.
And if you know, that's the John Maxwell famous line that leadership is influence. And
mm-hmm.
I believe that, like, if you're influencing people, you're a leader, and therefore everyone's a leader because everyone's a mother or a father. Everybody's a son or daughter. Everybody's a neighbor. Everybody's a coworker. And so by definition, we're all leaders. There are some people that are leading more and carrying more. But yeah, I would say it's a combination of both. And being more Christ-like, I really do believe. I think Christian leaders should be the best leaders in the world because we're following the greatest leader in the world. Like our Savior is in essence the greatest leader of all time.
Yeah, no argument on this end. All right, coming up, we're going to have a lot more with Brad Lomenick. We're talking about his book, H3 Leadership, Be Humble, Stay Hungry, Always Hustle. You're listening to Live the Promise. Bill Arnold in today for Susie Larson. We'll be back in just a minute. Welcome back to Live the Promise. So glad you joined us today. I'm talking to Brad Lomenick. He's written a book called H3, a book about leadership. Be humble, stay hungry, always hustle. And sometimes in seasons of life, you go through incredible burnout. You were in leadership at Catalyst, and you took a sabbatical from that leadership, and God brought you into a new season. Tell us what was going on at that time in your life, Brad.
Yeah, you know, it was an interesting time because I was leading something that was up and to the right. I mean, you know, all the signs were healthy. We were gathering more leaders than we'd ever gathered, and everything was successful. And I was, you know, writing my first book, and I would say in many ways on the pinnacle of the leadership landscape, especially in the Christian community. But I felt myself deteriorating, partly because all the things that I had started with in terms of the, you know, the essences of my leadership and helping people flourish around me were starting to get lost in the midst of pursuing the mountaintop and the pursuit for more and the, you know, the constant sense of we gotta outdo ourselves from what we did before last year and last month. And I didn't know what it was, Bill. Like it was a friend of mine who sat down with me over lunch August of 2013, and said, he said, you're done. And I said, what do you mean? Like, I'm done, like with lunch? He said, no, you're done. You're like the prize fighter in the ring who will just absolutely stay in until you get knocked out. And he said, you won't bow out, but you'll get knocked out.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, okay, that's actually, like, I was mad. He was a friend and I was mad at him. And then I thought, well, maybe he has something here and I trust him. And so he said, take a little break and let's just recalibrate. And it was life changing. Out of that, there was a true sense that the season of leading Catalyst was probably needing to come to a close for me, not because of, again, anything that happened or that of negative, or it was more like, no, you've done this really well for 10 years. But it's now somebody else's turn. And I, you know, that all those things all culminated into one moment or one season or one, you know, sort of ending of a season and starting of a new one. But man, I tell you what, like I probably wouldn't have stepped out unless somebody would have stepped in.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first lesson I learned.
Okay.
I also wasn't, as a leader, I was so blinded by the pursuit of the passion of the vision and the mission and the mountaintop that I was starting to lose my way. And everything, though, was successful. And it proved that healthy organizations sometimes have potentially unhealthy leaders leading them. And you won't see the signs of that many times until you fall off the cliff. And I don't know if I would have fallen off the cliff. I don't know if I would have, you know, I don't know if I would have been to the point where it was a major moral crisis or major moral meltdown, but I know this, like somebody stepping in for me, helped me to see the landscape and reality. And now like I'm healthier than ever.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a huge learning of man, people in your life as a leader, you better make sure you've got people in your life that will speak into your leadership and tell you the truth.
Yeah. Brad, there's a great quote by Dick Cavett, the comedian, who said, it's a rare man who wants to hear what he doesn't want to hear.
Mm, absolutely.
Yeah, and
true.
It sounds like your friend was speaking without being offensive, and you were trying to listen to what he was saying without being too defensive, weren't you?
Yeah, I think that's true. And I started to see some of the seedlings, I would say, some of the small signs of my leadership starting to just not be healthy. And, you know, for example, the early days of running Catalyst for me, you know, we were innovative. We were thinking outside the box. We were young and somewhat stupid in many ways, all in our 20s and all trying to figure this thing out. But here's what we did, Bill. We celebrated all the time. Like we would stop and celebrate little moments of success. We were for each other and we were like, you know, a Navy SEAL team.
Mm-hmm.
That had each other's backs. And over time, like, the celebration started to stop because we had more we were carrying. We had more stewardship. We were doing events with thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of leaders. And so those little celebration points started to go away because, again, I was too busy, I'm too important, I'm the man, you know, like, I don't have time for that. Like, I've got people. And all of that started to weigh on me. Again, this is true for every leader. When you start carrying more, when you start stewarding more, when you have more responsibility, you tend to move away from the things that will help people around you, closest to you, thrive the most.
Mm-hmm.
And what I've learned, again, and I've been told this by lots of people I admire and mentors, but it never really sunk in until I went through it, that the thing that you will start to see the latest in your journey as a leader is that people around you are not flourishing. And that you're actually creating an unhealthy culture because of your unhealthiness.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, okay, that sounds good on paper, but I started to see it after someone pointed it out to me.
Mm-hmm.
And my team would have all still followed me, like they still loved me and they still were for me. But you know, they kept saying under their breath. And then finally, once I gave them the permission, they kept saying, "Brad, we love you. Like, we will follow you whether you're healthy or unhealthy, whether you're functional or dysfunctional."
Mm-hmm.
But we love that other leader that used to be here in the early days that was always for us and always was making sure that we were successful and thriving and flourishing. And
mm-hmm.
you know, it's just, it's really easy for leaders to start to think that your world only revolves around you. But at the end of the day, successful leadership is about the people closest to you actually thriving the most.
Mm-hmm.
And I was, man, to the outside world, to speakers, to band people, to partners, to all the people on the outer concentric circles of my world, they loved Brad. Like they thought Brad was awesome. They would say, "Oh, I want to come work at Catalyst someday." And mm-hmm. and the people closest to me were saying, "Well, you know what? Like, we're not sure that's the story." And it was just all a recalibration. And I'm glad I did it. And that's so much of the story of H3 is me sharing that, hopefully in a way that is both vulnerable as well as practical to leaders, because so many of us struggle with this.
Yeah. Brad, what are some of the signs of burnout, maybe not just in a leadership role, but in our lives in general? I sometimes think I'm burned out when I sit on the edge of my bed and I'm, you know, I stare at a sock for 20 minutes and I go, yeah, I'm probably burned out, because it's just, I can't,
yeah.
You know, I'm feeling like, uh-oh. So we're going to go to break here in just a couple of minutes, but what are some signs of burnout?
I would say this, if you're really agitated more often than normal, mm-hmm. That's usually a sign. The small things that shouldn't agitate you end up agitating you.
Okay.
If you quit celebrating, I mentioned that one earlier.
I like that.
If you stop celebrating
yep.
the small wins. If you find that you don't have time for the people who helped you get there. So like all of a sudden you have this sense of the only time I have is for people who can do something for me. Like transactional becomes your mindset compared to relational.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a sign of a potential burnout. And then I'd say a fourth one is that you feel like that the pressure of the world is upon you and you
mm-hmm.
have no escape. And I think that's many times the feeling of I can't escape this, therefore I'm just going to implode.
Mm.
A lot of times, Bill, that's because you have no margin in your life. Like the lack of Sabbath, the lack of margin becomes this force field that then makes you explode. So those would be four.
Wow, lack of margin. That's what you're killing me with right now.
Lack of margin.
Yeah, that's
yeah.
interesting. And then you start treating people almost in a consumer mentality, don't you?
Like, absolutely. Everything becomes transactional.
Yeah.
About what you can get.
Yeah, I'm talking to Brad Lomanick, and he's written a book called H3, Humble, Hungry, and Hustle. We're going to talk about that when we come back. Lots more coming up on Live the Promise. Bill Arnold in today for Susie Larson. We've got three copies of Brad's book. If you want to give us a call, 1-877-933-2484. You might have a question for Brad, or you just want to get your name in the pool to get one of his books in the drawing. Go ahead and feel free to do that, 1-877-933-2484. Be back in just a minute. Welcome back to Live the Promise. We're so glad you joined us today. I'm having a very interesting conversation with Brad Lomanick. He has written a book called H3, and we're going to talk about each component of this book, the three traits, humble, hungry, and hustle, and I'm going to ask him to start breaking it down. Let's start with humble.
Humble, yes.
Self-discovery. Know who you are.
You know, that is the place that you have to start as a leader. If you want to lead others, you have to lead yourself, and leading yourself starts with knowing yourself. And, you know, sometimes that sounds like a good Tony Robbins quote,
yeah.
But I think it's really true. Like the greatest leaders and the ones who are most willing and able to influence people are so aware of who they are. And they understand the strengths and weaknesses they have. They understand that the places they need to be honest, and they're willing to let others in. And Self-discovery also has to do, Bill, with that sense of calling and purpose. And you know, I think we've got a generation of leaders who it's more important than ever to understand the true sense of calling on their life, because we live in an age now that is the gig economy, and it's free agency, and it's man, I can move from project to project. I don't look at career. I don't look at my life anymore, or my leadership, or my vocation as one job in one location for 40 years. I'm gonna have 10 or 12 of those different seasons, and that makes it even more important for us to be really clear on the way God's wired us, our sense of identity, and making sure that's built in Christ, and then what is our purpose, and then what is our assignment, meaning what is the what look like for this season? You know, where am I supposed to be? What am I supposed to be doing? But many times we end up wrapping so much of our assignment into our identity, and that can be really dangerous. Again, like for me, like I was in danger of being, you know, so wrapped up around Catalyst Brad, and Catalyst was my assignment, but it wasn't my identity. And I think we need a generation of leaders who are willing to ask those questions really deeply and say, all right, I got to understand these pieces of me that are true, but also the pieces of me that might change over time. And I think so many, especially young leaders, they are scared, especially those in their 20s. In some ways, they're nervous and they're scared about walking into a new career path and a new season and a landscape and industry and jobs and all that, knowing that they're really still not sure about what they're supposed to do. And I don't think any of us ever really were sure as a generation, but this generation for sure, they have the ability to just jump from project to project. So it's even more important for them to know themselves.
Okay, but under the humble trait, you've got openness, sharing the real you with others. I know that's a little bit, you have to know who you are before you can share the real you with others. But we're not always good at doing that either, because we're trying to present to the world a certain look and a certain image and a certain confidence level, which may not be anything near what we are.
Right. And, you know, it's so easy today to create a veneer, right? I mean, for all of us, like, social media has given us more chances than ever to be a version of ourselves that's not real.
Yeah.
And I would argue, and I think it's true, like, the greatest leaders today are the ones that authenticity and openness, in a sense of not just being aware of who I am, but also living out of that place and the way I walk into life, that I'm an open book.
Mm-hmm.
And leaders today, if you'll lead from a place of realness compared to a place of trying to be relevant or trying to be, trying to be perfect, I think that's the place where you will find greater influence.
Yeah,
because we're starving for authenticity.
Yeah,
like we're starving as a culture for something that is actually not fake. And
yeah.
when we find it as leaders, we go, man, I'm okay with the fact that you have weaknesses, because I know that you're real now.
Mm-hmm. It's just like me masquerading as a radio professional.
Well, in the old days, I mean, I've heard Pat Lencioni, a well-known leadership author, and, you know, I've heard Pat Lencioni say, the old days, leadership was defined by, in many ways, never let them see you sweat, right? Like, be perfect, hide all your weaknesses, show up with a sense that you're in charge, you have all the answers, you're right on every single situation. And today, it's just the opposite. It's like, man, when you stand up in front of your team, like, raise your arms up and show your pit stains. Like, say to your team, man, check that out. Look at that. Can you believe the pit stain I got going there? That's amazing.
Yeah.
And that's the idea that you have to hide all the things behind the curtain, and then you have to walk into life with this sense that I'm a perfect leader because now I'm in charge of you. Because everybody knows. I mean, if you have a team that's around you, especially if you have a spouse or a family, they know all the stuff you're not good at, and your team does as well. Like, they just need to make sure that you know that they know, like, that you're aware of the things that they're already aware of. And the great leaders are the ones who are willing to lead from that place of vulnerability and honesty and transparency, but also willing to say, you know what, like, for some reason I'm in charge and I'm supposed to be out here in front and let's go together. And people will absolutely, they will clamor to be on your team if you're leading out of a place of openness and authenticity.
Mm-hmm. I'm walking away with celebrate your pit stains. That's one of the things I'm walking away with today.
Yes, not only, I mean, show them off, celebrate them,
exactly.
Talk about them, brag about them.
Yeah.
Because everybody can see them already, like, right? I mean, if you might as well talk about it. Because everybody is whispering, going, man, check out those stains. You know, so as
exactly.
A leader today, like, you, part of your role is to say, hey, check these out. That's awesome, right?
Yeah, okay, so under the humble trait, you've got conviction as well. Stick to your principles. How hard is that to do in a world that's going to persecute you, point fingers, and make your life miserable if you give the wrong answer?
Yeah, I mean, that's the balance one today that so many people struggle with. I do think, though, for us as Christian leaders, in some ways this one is the easiest, and I don't mean it like that it's the easiest to live out. I think it's the easiest to understand from the perspective of being a leader of integrity, being a leader who is honest, being a leader who has character, like deep rooted, you know, and here's the hard part is once you start caring more, you know, once you start having more that you're trying to actually like accomplish in life, then the further you go out, the deeper your roots must be. And meaning that we watch all the time, like leaders who start to move into places of real notoriety, celebrity, you might say, stature, they're going up the ladder of influence. Man, if they're not deep-rooted, if those foundational blocks don't go deep down, like 10 stories down,
mm-hmm.
then you will watch them fall. And we don't honor as much the process of creating the foundation,
yeah.
of digging deep. But, man, I would say, like, especially for young leaders, I say this all the time to leaders in their 20s, your who determines your what. Your who, like, the inside determines the outside. The interior that you're building, the deep roots allow you to have deep fruit.
Mm.
So drive your foundation deep in order to extend your influence farther. You know, your reach is based on your depth.
Yeah.
And we'll get found out otherwise if we don't have those deep roots. We're like that, you know, we're like the really top heavy building that then just falls over because
mm-hmm.
there's no true foundation.
Yeah. I'm talking to Brad Lomanek. He's written a book called H3 Leadership: Be Humble, Stay Hungry, Always Hustle. We just covered all the humble issues. Now I want to get to hungry, and that's ambition. Develop an appetite for what's next.
Yeah, and this one is really, you know, if humble is a posture of understanding the story is bigger than me, understanding the inside is really creates the outside. It's the inner parts of who you are. Hungry is really, I would say, it's the posture of this, that I never arrive. As a leader, I never get to the finish line, and I'm always trying to get better. And, I love seeing leaders. In fact, John Maxwell, who I learned tons from and over the years got to work with, you know, I would watch John, who was at the pinnacle of the mountaintop of leadership. And he would sit in the front row at a conference he just spoke at. He would get down after he spoke, and he'd get in the front row, and he'd get his yellow pad out, Bill. Like, he'd get his old-school yellow pad out
mm-hmm.
with the four colored pens, you know, like the – and he would take notes, and he would listen, and he would, like – meet people and learn from them. And
yeah.
the lesson I took away from that was, you know what? I never arrive. Even when I feel like I'm maybe at the top of the mountain, there's still more for me to learn. There's a posture in me that says, I'll never stop learning. I'll always be willing to keep getting better. And I think healthy ambition is just that. Like, it's that sense that I never become the man or the woman.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I never sort of get to that place and then go, okay, that's it. I've now accomplished everything in life that I want to do. So the rest of the time, I'm just going to coast. And hunger is just that posture that says, I want to keep going. I want to keep going. I have and here's one of the things I love about hunger, which I found to be true in my life, but I think a lot of people kind of go, interesting, when as it relates to leadership, is curiosity, I think, is one of the great differentiators of great leaders.
Mm-hmm.
The sense that you're curious, like you're willing to be so curious about things that you ask great questions. And the leaders who I respect the most are the ones who typically say the least in a conversation, because what they're doing is they're saying to me, well, Brett, you know, what have you learned? And I'm saying, wait, like I should have my moleskin out because you're the man or the woman.
Right.
But their posture is one of, man, I can learn from anybody, and I always am willing to keep asking really good questions because I know that's going to make me better.
Yeah. Okay, so part of staying hungry, too, is being able to be brave and take some calculated risks. Talk about that.
Well, I mean, courage is the fuel in many, many ways for us to accomplish the things that we've been called to, but we're a little bit scared to step out onto that bridge or that diving board and take the plunge and cannonball in. And I would say, when I say taking calculated risk, like I like that posture because I'm not taking dumb risk.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people think that courage is, you know what, I'm just going to step out into the interstate on the 405 North here in Orange County, and I'm just going to get out there and see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's dumb risk.
Mm-hmm.
That's not smart risk. Calculated risk is when you look at all the context. You look at things happening, and you say, okay, in light of where I am today and where I want to be tomorrow, what steps can I take to accomplish the benchmarks and the mile markers to get to where I want to go?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I've seen this be way more digestible as a leader when you say to people, okay, let's create a plan here that your courage can have some runway on, because you know, courage at the end of the day, we all understand what that is, but sometimes it's really hard for us to do, especially depending on how we're wired.
Mm-hmm.
So the key for me is this: like, be willing to be a risk taker, be willing to be somebody who steps out in faith, but do it in a way that makes sense. And that has to all be kind of built on your own premise, the way you're wired. But courage, from, you know, so much of courage is truly being willing to stare the things in the face that potentially scare us.
Mm-hmm.
And what we all know is true is once we get on the other side many times of these courageous moments,
mm-hmm.
We actually look back and go, well, that wasn't that hard. Huh. Okay.
It's always that way,
isn't
it?
Let's try that again.
Yeah. It's always that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think the more steps you take of calculated risk, you actually are more willing to take more steps of calculated risk.
Yeah.
And courage builds on itself. You
yeah.
know, so if you're listening right now and you're thinking, I'm not really courageous, okay, take one step.
Right.
Take one step, because that's going to lead to two steps, and that'll lead to five steps, and the story goes on.
Yeah. Okay, this one I struggle with just a little bit because I feel like there's not a lot of people that can say this. You're one of them because you're a leadership guru. But under the hungry category, you say passion, love what you do. And I think, you know, a lot of people, whatever they get paid to do is work. And they don't really necessarily
yeah.
love what they do, but it's what their job is. And the whole idea of loving what you do, I don't know if that's – is that open to everybody?
It is. It is. And I would say this, like, if you don't love what you do, you need to be asking the question, is this really what I'm purposed and called to do? Like, is this really in my sweet spot of gift mix? And it
uh-huh.
doesn't mean you get up every day. Doesn't mean you get up every day and you're that person who's so annoying, because you're skipping into work and you're you know, you're that person who thinks everybody goes, wait a second, that is so like a facade. So this isn't about like that you come in and you're Jolly George
mm-hmm.
all the time, but it is that there's an underlying essence that what you're doing, there's a level of passion to it that gives you fuel for the journey.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you have to force yourself into a true state of feeling like you love what you do.
Yeah.
And that might be that you find parts of what you do that you actually do love. If you
yeah.
can't find anything, if there's nothing on the list of all the things you do during the day in your job that you can get somewhat passionate about, that's a neon sign saying, okay, like if possible, let's maybe reroute this story.
Okay.
And sometimes people say, I can't, you know, I've got three kids and this is my job and it's a means to an end at this point in my life. Okay, I get that. That's context and that's reality. But
yeah.
Man, if at all possible, let's start to recalibrate and let's reroute the story, because you may be in the wrong seat on the wrong bus.
Awesome.
And that's a real challenge.
Okay, Brad. Coming up, we're going to talk about the hustle element of the H3 book. We're going to take a little break. Bill Arnold in for Susie Larson today on Live the Promise. Be right back.
It ain't over yet, it ain't over yet. So move, keep walking. So keep moving on. Move.
Welcome back to Live the Promise. Bill Arnold in studio for Susie Larson today. I'm talking to Brad Lominick. He's written a book called H3, and we're talking about hustle now. H3 is the three leadership: be humble, stay hungry, always hustle. And we're going to talk about hustle right now. And set standards that scare you. I know we're talking about leadership and what leaders need to have, but this also applies to everyone's little personal life too.
Absolutely. Yeah. I love the idea of setting standards that scare you to death or scare the daylights out of you. And just that premise that in all of our life, you know, as a parent, as a neighbor, as somebody on a team, as a worker, an employee, as a part of a church, you know, all the areas of life, like, we should be continually raising our standard of excellence. You know, being called into a following Jesus in every area, it raises the stakes. It doesn't lower them.
Uh-huh.
You know, like, we serve a God who's great, therefore we should be too. And, you know, following Jesus really should require us to be the best in the world at what we do, period.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of standard that, you know, I want to have as a leader. And so, yeah, I love the posture of a hustling leader that says, I'm going to be the best in the world. Why? What, you know, it goes back to Matthew 5:16, let your light shine so that people see your good works and then glorify not you, but your Father in heaven.
Yeah.
So,
now, I love that you say set standards that scare you. It really fires me up, but I don't know what it means.
Well, and I would say this, like, you know, wherever you are in life, say you're a parent, which a lot of people are that are probably listening to this, you know, that the idea of setting a standard, it's find a level in a certain area that you're not doing well.
Mm-hmm.
Find an area that you're not doing well, and then set a standard that's a level that might be three or four rungs higher than where you are currently. And that you say, is there any possible way that I can do that?
Mm-hmm.
Like, if I could get the best Father of the Year award in the global landscape or whatever,
mm-hmm.
like, how would I do that? You know, like, what would it mean for me to start to become a father that lives that out?
Yeah.
And, you know, that's the kind of standard. Sometimes this is awards, Bill. Sometimes it's accolades, it's accomplishments, it's a sense that, you know, you start to be noticed. But more than anything else, this is like your willingness to say, I don't want to live by mediocrity. I don't want to be the leader who just coasts. I don't want to be the person who is sort of just the average Joe. And being an average Joe, there's nothing wrong with being an average Joe. What there is something wrong with is the idea that we get to certain points in our lives after we graduate from college or high school, for that matter.
Mm-hmm.
And everything about us as a learner growing up, and we were wanting to get better, and then all of a sudden we get to this place in life and we look at it and go, okay, my whole goal now is basically just to get by and do little as possible in order to get to the finish line.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not what God called us to. God called us to, I hope this is true, a life of flourishing, a life of improvement, a life of constant innovation, of getting better, of succeeding, of moving from strength to strength. And so, you know, the idea of that standard, figure out what that is for you and your context. And it's personal. It's also team. It's also organization. It may be for your church. It may be whatever the industry or place that you're running in. What does it look like for you to raise the bar on a consistent basis?
Okay. So, Brad, we've set standards now that are going to scare us, and now we got to stick with it, and we got to commit to completion. So how do we do that in terms of execution? What do we write it down? Do we put it up on our mirror in the bathroom? What do we do that's going to give us a sense of, I'm going to stick with it, and I'm going to commit to completion?
Well, I mean, the big thing is that you are willing to write it down. You're also willing to share it. Like, whatever it is that you're saying that your standard should be, once you start bringing other people into the equation, then all of a sudden things get real and things start to then have a sense of accountability to them. So I would say share that with people around you, whether it's your family or it's your coworkers. There has to be a level that execution, then the idea of committing to completion, it becomes a framework and just a part of who you are.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll say this, like, about anybody in any environment at any level, the way for you to actually stand out as an employee and as a person is that you get things done. So if you want to be great at your job, like if you want to set a standard, start here. Start with a standard that says, you know what, for this week, everything that I'm supposed to get done, I'm going to actually take across the finish line and make it happen.
Yeah.
Now, okay, that's a standard that scares people.
Oh yeah.
And just be the one who's willing to say, these five things this week I will make happen. I will get done.
Yeah.
And that's a really practical thing to do, but really hard.
Okay, Brad, in like a minute, talk about creating the margin that we so desperately need.
Yeah, margin for me was one that I was missing out on. So this one was personal. I was filling up all the time so that my life had no margin in it. And the beauty of margin, I mean, the margin in a business gives you profit, which allows you to pursue opportunities, new opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
Margin in family creates memory moments.
Mm-hmm.
Margin in friendships actually gives you room to respond to people when they need something. And most of us, we end up filling our lives. We fill all the gaps in without leaving margin for those moments of messiness, of inconvenience, of opportunity, of quiet, of Sabbath. And so you have to set boundaries that almost seem annoying to people.
Sure.
In the sense of, you know what, like this, I need this whole Saturday to be able to just recharge.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I can't do anything this Saturday. And it'll be hard at first, especially for those of us who are extroverts and who love being around people and being parts of things. We YOLO, like we have YOLO and we have FOMO, fear of missing out. But the margin in your life actually will give you room then to breathe, to understand Sabbath, to actually rest.
Yeah.
I mean, we are a culture of lack of rest.
Yeah.
We are restless.
Yeah.
And let's stand out as leaders and have those places that we walk in and we're actually refreshed.
Yeah. Now, Brad, I know you're on a very busy schedule. You're calling us from the airport. You're on your way to Denver. You got a lot going on, and you've got a lot of deadlines, and there's a lot of people listening to today that probably feel a little burned out. I'm going to pray for everyone right now. Heavenly Father, we are at the end of our rope. We need margin. We need space. Your peace transcends all understanding. So we're going to seek that today. I pray for Brad and his trip today and all the work he's got ahead of him. I pray for his family and all the families of people who are at a place of burnout today. Pray all this in Jesus' name. Brad, thanks for being such a great guest. I've loved your book and your material. You've just been a blast. Have a great, safe trip. You've been listening to Live the Promise. I'm Bill Arnold, in for Susie Larson. You can find a podcast of this interview up on our mobile-friendly website at myfaithradio.com. That's it for until tomorrow. We're going to have Trillia Newbell and the Aaron and David Pierce from Steger International. See you tomorrow.